Numbers. Are they sexy? Well, Adam Spencer seems to think they are. Australia's funniest and most famous mathematician reckons they are, and has released his third book, Time Machine. It's a bit of an historical look back at the history of math, some of its more colourful characters and stories. We welcome ex-radio presenter, Sydney Sailor Captain, and inspiration and mathematician onto the program. G'day, Adam.
I'll take that intro any day of the week, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, good, mate, good. Really good to talk to you. Look, you've spent the best part of the last 20 years trying to prove that numbers and maths are sexy. How's that going for you?
Well, I think people might just be coming around to it now. The phrase I use at the moment is that mathematicians will build this century. All the stuff you're hearing about now of big data and massive analytics and designing apps and the digital revolution and that sort of stuff. Mate, it's the maths nerds who are going to decide the shape of the world this century. The future of all science is basically crunching gigantic data, but also the future of retail and the future of social interaction is all going to be determined by people who can handle the numbers. There's going to be no shortage of data created by them. You know, 50 billion devices will be wearing, connected to the Internet of Things and all that sort of stuff. It's going to be up to the kids coming through high school now who can then turn that data into information. They're the ones who'll decide how we go for the next few years.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? And numbers haven't eased up, you know. It's been a journey from a long, long way back, of course, all the way up into the future. We're never going to stop needing maths and needing numbers.
Well, that's what I look at with my new book, which is called Time Machine, starts 10,000-odd years ago with a counting stick, a baboon's bone with some grooves carved in the side that we think might have been a calendar, it might have been a fertility chart for women in a certain group or something like that. And finishes with a moment earlier this year where a supercomputer was used for a mathematical proof that, get this, needed 200 terabytes of information, i.e. if you or I sat down and tried to read that proof ourselves, we'd need to set aside a lazy 10 billion years. So in just 10,000 years, we've come from, you know, hacking things on the side of sticks to a computer proving a single thing with 10 billion years worth of information. That's an amazing ride if you think about it.
It is pretty amazing. The progress of civilization, yeah, I can't even say it.
Friday morning.
that we've made in that period of time. And it's just exponentially growing every single year. You know, not only is the amount of data that we're accumulating and having to analyze and look through, but just the way we're using it and how it's just progressed.
One of the things I point out in the book is, you know, just the hideous way that people used to die, even within one human lifetime ago, the steps that we've made forward in medicines and kids just not dying before the age of five from things that now you'd consider horribly unlucky if you got them, even in some third world countries, that were just the way things were a century ago. One thing I love to point out, back in the 1930s, when it came to physics, we knew about three fundamental particles. We knew about electrons, protons, and neutrons, right? Within one human lifetime, 80-odd years later, we now know of 61 fundamental particles. In just one human lifetime, we've gone from 3 to 61. We've learned more in one human lifetime than we had in the entire history of human thought up until then about something as fundamental as what is stuff made up of, what is matter. That's what an incredible time to be alive.
It sure is. It sure is. Your book has been described as gripping as any of my books, but with more maths and less exploding heads. That was from Matthew Riley.
Yeah, well, Matthew Riley knows one thing. He knows how to make a head explode in a book, and he certainly got me covered on that front, but I think I do shade Matthew slightly on the nerdy maths when it comes to Time Machine.
Sure, sure. Your book also describes some of the more crappy jobs in history that involve numbers. I've always thought counting votes was a pretty crappy job, but can you tell us what other ones you found crazy?
Yeah, quite important. A couple of days ago, look, my favourite, when I tell people about all the bizarre jobs I found out, my favourite one in the book comes from the English royal court in the 1600s-1700s. Back in the day, before they invented the portable toilet, if you were out for a walk and you needed to go, you just pop behind a tree or maybe, you know, in the river or something like that, but not if you're the King of England, my friend. And so the King of England had someone who would follow him round and supervise carrying this portable toilet and a sort of modesty curtain. And so that stool that the king would sit on, this person was known as the groom of the stool. Now, when you think about it, that's not a particularly glamorous job, and especially for your larger kings like Henry VIII, the groom of the stool was rumored to have to do a bit of the sort of tidying up stuff as well. But if you think about it, if you're the groom of the stool, you get guaranteed one-on-one time with the King of England three or four times a day for about 5 minutes a pop. It was an incredibly influential position.
What was it?
That everyone in England wanted, because while the King's there doing his business in a fairly vulnerable position, you can just lean into his ear and go, well, if you don't like her, why don't you just chop her head off and marry someone else, dude? And while you're at it, why don't we go and invade France? I mean, seriously. And so it was incredibly... Some grooms of the stool passed on the position from father to son. Some were so trusted by the King, when the King died and his son came in, the son said, I'll keep the same groom of the stool. Everyone back in the day wanted to be groom of the stool, my friend.
Well, there we go. That could be a job that could be translated to something nowadays. I'm not quite sure what you'd call it. But
I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump has a groom of the stool. He just gives off that sort of a vibe.
He does. Hey, with your love of sport, we know you love your sport, cricket, Aussie rules, you know, whatever it might be. I'm still waiting for your big book of numbers about sport.
I throw a little bit into each book. I throw in here the date back in the 1920s when the first, I think Arsenal in the English Football League, was the first team ever to wear numbered shirts in the 1920s. Up until then, everyone just sort of ran around. And,
just
and
guessing
and
who they were.
Finally occurred to someone, well, hold it, why don't we put some numbers on the back so people know who everyone is? Genius! Genius!
Amazing.
But yeah, I might do an entire book on sporting numbers. It is, I mean, it's the great thing about sport for stats nerds is, I mean, I know people who enjoy cricket for the statistics. More than the cricket, especially by the Australian team are playing at the moment, I must say.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty easy to count to 10 pretty fast.
Yeah, exactly.
With the padding. One last one I was going to ask you about. You've got a new kids book coming out as well, Number Crunches.
Yeah, so the books that I write, when I first wrote these popular maths books, like Big Book of Numbers and World of Numbers, I thought I was aiming the mathematics probably for smart switched on kids at the very end of high school, early university, and I was pleasantly shocked. And how many people said, you know, kids are only 12 or 13 were really getting into it. And so I thought that was just wonderful. And we've put out a couple of books the last couple of years. Yeah, Number Crunches is this year's one, aimed at more kids 6 through to 10 years old. And there's, you know, there's shapes and mathematics, but there's also colouring in and doing your own drawings and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's to try and also, I mean, kids, you know, kids love reading. They're going to grow up reading something. If you can hook them into reading something that's got a slight bit of maths or science content, then that's not a bad thing to do. So, yeah, Number Crunches is out there as well to try and get people starting the journey just a few years earlier. The best way, if people want to get them, mate, if people want a signed copy of the book, because I self-publish this crazy thing, if you go through one of the major publishing companies and say, look, I want to put more maths in, they tend to look at you a bit weirdly. So I self-publish these. So if people want a copy, the best way to go is to adamspencer.com.au, that website again,
adamspencer.com.au,
and you'll get a signed copy of the book.
Fantastic. That's awesome. Really cool that you can get on there and get a signed copy. Adam Spencer, we loved having you on the air. I'm looking forward to playing. You might not be in the team next year, but you got to come down and watch the Sydney Sailors win again next year, I hope.
Yeah, my spiritual influence will still be exerted. Don't worry about that. And, mate, good on you and everyone for doing a great job at the wonderful Sydney institution that is 2SER.
Thank you so much. Thanks for joining the program today, Adam Spencer.
That website again, adamspencer.com.au.